This show is created for adult audiences only. Our show notes include content warnings and other helpful information. We strongly recommend taking a moment to assess the situation before continuing. Let's begin.
Episode 137, The Cash Landrum Incident. It was a cold December night in 1980, when the tranquility of the Texas piney woods was shattered by an encounter so bizarre that it would become one of the most debated and mysterious incidents in ufological history. The Cash Landrum Incident, as it would later be known, began as a simple car ride home, but quickly escalated into a harrowing experience for three unsuspecting contactees. Vicki Landrum, her 7-year-old grandson Colby, and her longtime best friend, Betty Cash, were returning from a dinner outing when their journey took a truly extraordinary turn. As they drove along the desolate FM 1485 in Huffman, Texas, their attention was drawn to a bright light piercing the darkness. Assuming it was a simple airplane approaching Houston Intercontinental Airport, they thought little of it at first. But as they continued down the winding road, the light grew more intense and peculiar in nature. The road ahead was bathed in an eerie green glow as they approached a clearing. It was there that they encountered something truly inexplicable, an enormous diamond-shaped object hovering above the road, radiating intense heat and light. Utterly transfixed, Landrum insisted that Cash stop the car to observe this enigmatic phenomenon. She turned her head to her best friend and said, "Don't worry, that's Jesus. He will not hurt us." Betty Cash, driven more by curiosity and concern than any type of religious fervor, turned off the car and stepped onto the road for a closer look. She described the object as huge, larger than the two-lane road. The mysterious craft was intensely bright, in a dull metallic silver. It was shaped like an enormous upright diamond, with the size of the Dayton Water Tower, with its top and bottom cut off so that they were flat rather than pointed. Small blue lights ringed the center. The perplexed pair stood in awe as periodically over the next few minutes, flames shot out of the bottom, flaring outward in a large cone shape. Each time the fire dissipated, the UFO floated a few feet downward toward the road. But when the flames blasted out again, the object rose about the same distance. The heat was intense enough to make the car's metal body painful to touch. Despite her initial read of the situation, beginning to fear for their safety, Vicki Landrum urged her friend to return to the car. Cash would later say that she had to use her coat to protect her hand from being burned by the door handle when she finally got back in. When she touched the dashboard, Landrum claimed her hand pressed into the softened vinyl, leaving an imprint that was evident weeks later. As they attempted to leave, the object began to ascend, flanked by a group of 23 Chinook helicopters, surrounding it in tight formation. With the road now clear, Cash says she drove on, claiming to see glimpses of the object and the helicopters receding into the darkness. From first sighting of the object to its departure, the encounter lasted all of 20 minutes. Cash drove the Landrums directly home and retired for the evening herself, still shaken from what would become a defining moment in her life. Unfortunately, the aftermath was just as perplexing as the event itself. Within hours, all three witnesses fell ill, suffering nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, generalized weakness, a burning sensation in their eyes, and feeling as though they were suffering from sunburn. Over the next few days, Betty Cash's symptoms worsened, with many large, painful blisters forming on her skin. When taken to a hospital emergency room on January 3, 1981, she couldn't walk and had lost large patches of skin and clumps of hair. She was released after 12 days, though her condition was not much better, and she later returned to the hospital for another 15 days. It wouldn't be long before the doctors realized that her symptoms mirrored those of acute radiation sickness, a fact that would fuel much speculation in the years to come. In April of the following year, Vicky was found to be developing a cataract in one eye, and Betty was first treated for breast cancer just 2 years later. Neither condition was known to have been present prior to their UFO encounter. As news of their encounter spread, it attracted the attention of leading UFO investigators. Among them was John Schussler, a respected figure in the field, who took a keen interest in the case. His meticulous investigation brought to light several intriguing details. The presence of the Chinook helicopters suggested a possible military involvement, a theory that gained traction when it was revealed that the Chinooks were stationed at a nearby Air Force base. The involvement of the military sparked a wave of speculation. Some theorized that the object was a secret military experiment gone awry, while others posited that the government had knowledge of extraterrestrial activity. Despite these theories, official inquiries by the Air Force and other governmental agencies yielded little. They denied any involvement or knowledge of the incident, a stance that only deepened the mystery. Frustrated by the lack of official recognition and answers, Cash and Landrum, backed by Schussler, decided to take legal action. In 1981, they filed a lawsuit against the U.S. government, seeking compensation for the health issues they attributed to the encounter. The case, Cash and Landrum versus the United States, was a groundbreaking moment in ufological history. It was one of the first times that alleged victims of a UFO encounter sought legal reparation. The trial, however, proved to be yet another avenue of disappointment. The government maintained its stance of no knowledge or involvement in the incident. Without concrete evidence linking the military to the UFO, the case was eventually dismissed, leaving Cash and Landrum without the closure or recognition they sought. The dismissal of the lawsuit, however, did not end their quest. The incident continued to garner interest from the media and ufologists all over the world. Television programs, documentaries, and books featured their story, each shedding light on different aspects of the encounter. Skeptics and believers alike debated the veracity of their claims, dissecting every detail of their account. As the years passed, the incident remained a focal point in UFO research, its significance underscored by the physical evidence of its impact. Betty Cash's health continued to deteriorate, a reminder of the very real consequences of that December night. Her condition was a stark contradiction to the government's denial and a persistent question mark in the annals of UFO history. As the years went by, the physical and emotional toll on the witnesses became increasingly evident. After years of struggling with chronic respiratory issues, Betty Cash died of lung cancer in 1998. Her death attributed by many to the long-term consequences of the encounter. Vicky Landrum and her grandson Colby also carried the scars of that night, both physically and psychologically. The lack of closure and acknowledgement from the authorities only compounded their suffering. But the incident's impact extended beyond the lives of those directly involved. It became a cornerstone case for UFO researchers, cited frequently in discussions about government secrecy and potential health effects related to UFO encounters. It raised important questions about the accountability of governments in cases involving unidentified aerial phenomena and the rights of citizens who experience them. The mystery of the Cash Landrum incident also had a significant cultural impact. It inspired episodes in television series, was referenced in books on UFOs, and became a staple case in documentaries about unexplained phenomena. The enduring interest in the case reflected a broader societal fascination with the unknown and the possible existence of extraterrestrial life. Over time, various theories emerged in an attempt to explain the incident. Some suggested that the object was a secret military craft, perhaps an experiment in advanced propulsion technology. Others continued to speculate about an extraterrestrial origin, while skeptics proposed more mundane explanations, such as a misidentified aircraft or a hoax. However, none of these theories were conclusively proven, leaving the case shrouded in mystery. The legal battle fought by Cash and Landrum, though unsuccessful, set a precedent and highlighted the need for a systematic approach to dealing with UFO incidents. It underscored the importance of taking eyewitness accounts seriously and the necessity for transparency and investigation by authorities. As we reach the conclusion of this short but hard-hitting story, the Cash Landrum incident remains a symbol of the unexplained, a narrative that captures the human encounter with the inexplicable. It reminds us of the limits of our understanding and the vastness of the mysteries that surround us. We may be left with more questions than answers, but that is nothing new for us here at Campfire. We do know a few things. We know that this event was a turning point in the lives of Betty Cash and Vicky Landrum, and not for the better. Whether the source of the medical issues that plagued them was of a Fortean nature or not, we do know that their suffering was very real. Events like this are not to be taken lightly. And we know that this Grade A Texas mystery, with its unanswered questions and enduring legacy, continues to intrigue and inspire a new generation of budding ufologists, pushing them to keep asking questions, to call out obfuscation when they see it, to keep looking up.
Welcome, campers, to Campfire Tales of the Strange and Unsettling. We are your hosts. I'm Ryan.
And I'm Jordan. And now the debrief.
All right, welcome back.
Yeah, another notch in the old UFO belt.
See, these ones I always get the most excited for.
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, talking about
somebody should.
UFOs and aliens.
Yeah?
Yeah.
This is a cool one. This is like one of those rare ones that have a whole lot of physical evidence that could technically be tied.
Right, we don't have like this, you know, bout with hypnotic regression and finding out they went aboard this alien spaceship or whatever else. We just have the effects of them literally in its vicinity.
Yeah.
And, I mean, lasting effects, if you will.
Yeah.
That they endured just by literally getting out of the car for the short time that they were there.
Yeah. 20 minutes fully from the first time they saw it until it flew away.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And maybe, I mean, if you go on their theory, it killed them,
right?
Eventually, you know what I mean?
Well,
it
made them sick.
It's, I feel like with this, the big question, because I think it's undeniable that they saw something,
yeah,
right? That they had an encounter with something. I think the big question here is, was it some sort of secret government craft, or was it something extraterrestrial?
right?
See, like that's
it. Could definitely be either.
It could. It absolutely could. And that's, I mean, that's something to obviously we need to, you know, kind of focus on as well, or make note of too, because I mean, we don't know for sure. Again, we never actually have any, you know, recollection or any memory or anything that's came about of them even seeing, you know, quote unquote extraterrestrial.
Right.
So, I mean, it very well could have been like a testing site that, and that's why, I mean, with all of these military helicopters that were surrounding it, you know, why very, you know, could explain very well why they were there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And why they all just happened to basically show up and surround this thing at the same time.
Yep. There's some weird stuff. Like, I will say there's a little bit of inconsistency in the witness statements, because so there are two separate big events when it comes to witness statements. There's the initial statements that they gave to John Schuessler and his wife, mm-hmm. which was like a month after the event, right? And in that initial interview, Betty Cash and Vicki Landrum, they both say that, like, Betty Cash said that she couldn't get up close enough and that the lights were too bright for her to discern a shape of the craft.
Yeah.
And Vicki said that she couldn't tell what shape it was. But she added that the 7-year-old grandson, Colby, he said that he swore it looked like a big diamond.
Mm.
He saw it from the car. He never got out of the car.
Right.
The grandson. But then later, when she drew a sketch, it was like the next year, I think. I believe it was the next year. There was, they drew sketches for someone doing, it was the Air Force interview. And it was 8 months after the I found it in my notes. So 8 months after, so 7 months after that initial interview, they did an interview for the Air Force investigation, and they drew sketches where they both drew this like diamond shape, flat on top, flat on the bottom. That's what Betty drew, and then Vicki added the flames, talked about the flames coming out of the bottom. Mm-hmm. They both signed the sketch. They're like, yep, that's what it looked like. So there's some weirdness there. Like, maybe they're just influenced by what the kid said, you know? And they're like, yeah, it must have been a diamond. He saw a diamond.
I mean, it'd be pretty easy for them to be questioning what it was that they saw, and them trying to like piece together, like, it kind of looked like this.
Sure.
And for the kid to be like, well, I saw it like this, and then they'll be like, oh, well, yeah, okay, you're right. It was probably
because they're like, well, what I saw wasn't definitely not a diamond.
Right.
You exactly. know?
Yeah.
So like, it'd be pretty easy to sort of morph your mm-hmm. memory. Right. There's a lot of that with this stuff, though. A lot of like possibly implanted memories, like altered memories over time, things like that. You know, it happens in normal life where you tell a story a certain way, you hear a story a certain way so many times, you start remembering the events like that.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
But like I've had moments where like I say I run into someone that I haven't hung out with in 15 years. Right. And we get to like talking about the old days or whatever, and we'll remember the same event completely differently.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been there.
Like, yeah, it happens all the time. So I just wanted to note that discrepancy between the two different statements.
And then sometimes in those types of cases, you just go with, oh yeah, maybe it was, maybe that's I'm just remembering it incorrectly. Yeah. Right. So then you allow yourself to believe or see it that same way. And then that would explain why they both drew the same thing.
Yep.
Because that's how they all pieced it together. And
yep.
You know, sounds good enough at least.
Yeah. I mean, there have been tons of experiments with like eyewitness experiments mm-hmm. where if you plant someone in the group who is absolutely certain about what they saw, people just start agreeing with them.
Yeah, they can influence the whole group.
Like, yeah. Like, someone who's like, oh, I'm not sure what color his shirt was. If the person next to them goes like, it was absolutely a black shirt. I remember, like, because of this and this, he was wearing a black shirt. I know he was. Then the other person later will be like, is this guy in a black shirt? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it just becomes new knowledge for right. them because they believe the person.
It's crazy how much a single person can have an effect. I mean, especially being so positive and so sure.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, like, anybody that sees that is going to be like, oh, well, you seem to know.
Exactly.
So they're gonna take you for, you know, what it is. And it's crazy that you can influence so much and so easily.
It's just like it's a small scale version of like when you're in school and your science teacher tells you what the speed of light is, you just onboard that as new knowledge, right? Yeah. Like you trust because you trust the source, right?
That's true, right?
So if the person swearing up and down that the guy's wearing a black shirt becomes a source that you trust, if they convince you that they're trustworthy, then you just take it on as new knowledge.
You
that
the guy was wearing a black shirt. Don't expect them to steer you wrong or, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, yep. That's fair.
Yeah, it's weird. Just, people it is, are weird. It is,
right. Exactly. Anyhow, yeah, it's a random thought there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so it's the big part of, like, the big thing about this case that sets it apart is obviously the health issues, right? Because...
Yeah,
because they get very sick very fast. Like, it happens really quickly. And that's actually a hang-up for some people, because they eventually start saying, like, it's radiation sickness, right? Like, they must have been exposed to radiation.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with that, and this was pointed out by... Okay, Brad Sparks, who's a guy who wrote a book about this, he pointed out a long time ago that the symptoms were similar to ionizing radiation, right? But how quickly the symptoms onset,
mm-hmm.
it would only be consistent with a massive dose that would have meant death in just a few days, right? But they go on to live for quite a while
right, yeah.
afterward. Mm-hmm. So like it's confusing because it's with radiation, either the symptoms come on slowly and you live a long time, or they come on very quickly and you die very quickly.
Yeah.
So it's weird to have one of each, right? Like the symptoms hit them right away really quickly, but it wasn't a big enough dose of radiation to kill them. It's strange. So, like, what he proposed was that it was more likely some kind of chemical contamination. Like, he presumed it was aerosol, some kind of, like, airborne chemical contamination.
Right.
Because they got really severe symptoms, but your body can process chemical contamination, and it doesn't kill you the way radiation does. Either way, they were exposed to something.
I mean, clearly something. Right. I mean, obviously, this is something that was coming off of this craft. I mean, you know, it was either maybe and each time that apparently this flame, which we may or may not have actually seen.
Right.
Like maybe each time it was like discharge, it was like discharging like an exhaust that was, you know, had a lot of radiation in it or something.
Yeah.
But
I mean, that would have fallen into what he was saying was like it was aerosolized. Right. It was like in the air. So... I don't think, because he doesn't really debunk it at all. So okay. His position isn't really to debunk it. He was just calling out the fact that, you know, the radiation probably was not radiation sickness that they experienced. He thinks that it did come from whatever they saw, but it was something chemical, not radioactive.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes more sense.
Yeah. It's pretty bad. Like they had some pretty fucking severe symptoms. Like Cash was really fucked up. Like she got the brunt of it. She definitely had the worst. Betty ultimately died of lung cancer, but right. she had so they both got cancer. But Betty had after all the craziness from this chemical ingestion or radioactivity, whatever it was, because she had like patches of skin fall. She was having like boils that would come up, and like she was losing patches of skin. Her hair was falling out. Like she was all fucked up for quite a while. And then, and then she had severe respiratory issues for basically the rest of her life, from, you know, from 1980 until 1998 when she died. Those respiratory issues at some point became full blown lung cancer, and she died from complications of that cancer. So really it was like the turning point. Her like, and her health was fine before this. Like she was, you know, she was a runner. She was like healthy and described the way that people describe everyone after they die, you know, but she was like actually that before the incident.
Yeah.
And then everything went crazy downhill after this encounter. I'm always like super fascinated when UFO stuff gets crossed with like religious iconography. So, Vicky's first impulse, because she was like a born again Christian, right? And her first impulse when she sees this like glowing thing in the sky is like, Jesus has come back.
It's Jesus.
Yeah. And she like, she actually said that to Betty, was like, don't worry, it's Jesus. It won't hurt us. Like, but her mind very quickly change. Cause like, I think once she's realized how intense it was, like the car was heating up, the like, yeah, there's like a bad smell that accompanied it. And it probably, the better look she got at it, the weirder it looked, you know?
It's just funny that that's the initial, like the initial thought is, oh, it's Jesus.
I think if say it's like a full blown Independence Day scenario, right, where they just like start showing up, start breaking through the clouds in that epic way, right? I think there would be a large portion of Christians that were like, it's the second coming. Like, fuck yeah, Jesus is breaking right through the cloud bank. Like, look at him. I think a lot of people would react like that.
I mean, you know, I guess it's possible. It just depends on... I guess it depends on the way it actually happens, I think.
Yeah. I mean, there's that reveal, right?
Right. And
going back to Independence Day, where the clouds roll back and you actually see what's there. Mm-hmm. Right? I think at that point, most people would be like, oh.
Yeah, that's not Jesus.
Not Jesus. I actually watched that movie in anticipation for this recording.
Nice. So. I haven't watched it in a long time. I need to.
I hadn't either. It popped up on my like For You, and I was like, "Yeah, fuck yeah! I'll watch some Prime Jeff Goldblum. I'm up for that."
Yeah,
it holds up. It's still a damn good movie.
The last time I watched it, it was still solid. It's probably been maybe a year, maybe 2 years.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was still just as good last time I saw it.
I mean, I'll watch Jeff Goldblum read a phone book.
I mean, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
I mean, he's fantastic. My go-to is Jurassic Park, but, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yep. That's right there, too.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta say, I think we grew up in the best era of movies, period.
I mean, yeah. I think we really did.
Yeah. I mean, if you really think about it, they aren't making movies like Independence Day and Jurassic Park anymore. They just, like new things, you know what I mean? Like the, when those came out, they weren't like anything we'd seen before.
Right. That's why every other thing that comes out now is a remake.
Yeah. Usually of the shit we had when we were a kid.
Right.
Yeah. What a bummer.
Yeah. But I mean, I've come across a couple remakes that I've enjoyed.
Yeah. There. I hear the new Wonka's good.
I liked it. I mean, but it's not a remake. It's a prequel.
Yeah. There have been like 7 Wonkas now at this point.
Well, yeah. Right? Well, I mean, really only 2. Willy Wonka and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
That's the Johnny Depp one, right? Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yep.
Okay.
But yeah, I feel like that's enough. I like the Wonka story. It was, you know, it was cute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've only heard good things about it.
But Wonka and aliens, same thing, basically.
Yeah, basically. I appreciate your attempt to sort of suture that back together. Yep. Mm-hmm. I'll take it.
It was just before it went too far. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, a lot of this one is the story is so unique because of just what happened to them after the fact.
Yeah, the medical repercussions.
Right, everything that they suffered. And so, does that mean a lot of this, when it gets referenced and, you know, just as you mentioned in the story, when the story gets referenced, it's due to the effects that these, you know, UFOs and, you know, UAPs, whatever, like the effects that they have on health.
Yeah.
And that's been noted in several cases since, you know, I mean,
for sure.
So it's but yeah, it's more of a very like pivotal point, a pivotal one in history, just due to the, you know, just due to like the health conditions and everything that happened, or, you know, that became about.
Yeah. And another thing they had that first night was they had the pink eye, the burning eyes.
The burn, yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We talked about, and what was that last UFO case we covered?
The Linda Jones encounter.
Yep. Yep. She had that too.
Yeah.
Yep. The conjunctivitis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also this one, like, it's crazy how hot the car got.
Yes.
Just it being in this area too. The fact that I know, like, it's pointed out a lot in any like article and stuff about the handprint on the dash.
Well, they actually filmed. They did a HBO did a documentary in like 85. They actually showed photos that the women took of the handprint in the dashboard.
That's crazy. Like,
and yeah, it's nuts. And that to me is proof enough on its own that that something happened.
Oh yeah.
Like that would take a tremendous and like radiant.
Mm-hmm.
Very specifically radiant heat to be able to do that without destroying the car.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
If it was that hot, like I'm very surprised there were no other, like it didn't have any other effect on the car other than they had to use like a t-shirt or something to like grab the handle.
Yeah.
You know, some piece of cloth or whatever, just because it was so hot. But I'm just very impressed that it was that warm and it didn't cause problems.
It's almost like convection heat. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Where it like heats from the outside in.
Yeah.
Because the body of the car was heating up and then the dashboard heated up. But it didn't harm anything. Like you would think that wires would melt.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
That's what I'm saying. Like, you know.
So. Yeah. So the heat never reached the interior, the like mechanical interior of the car.
I'm sure had they stayed there a little bit longer, it probably would have had a lot more.
Right?
Or caused
might
a
lot
more
issues.
Might have
had a fucking...
But.
Yeah, you might have had a mercury puddle.
Yeah. They're driving down and just like it's starting to like slowly morph into just a globby mess.
Exactly.
Sweet. That's what I want to see.
That reminds me of another fucking 90s movie. There early 2000s movie that I watched recently. One of my all-time favorite movies, Volcano.
Volcano.
Yeah.
That's a good
Tommy Lee Jones movie.
I've seen that one in forever.
Fucking I will go. I'll skip any kind of movie if another option is to watch Tommy Lee Jones put a map on the hood of a car. Like that's one of my favorite genres.
Yeah. Movies where Tommy Lee Jones puts a map on the hood of a car.
Exactly.
Nice.
All of them.
It's its that own genre. One,
it is. That he does it in like so many movies from that era. Like he's always telling people to establish perimeters and shit. You know what I mean? He like slams
the
map
down.
Back
when he was like legit.
Yeah. I think he's still legit. I don't know. I don't know if he's been in anything recently.
Is he still alive?
Almost definitely. Now you scared me.
Actually, you find out he passed away in like 2019. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Sad. I know that would be sad.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he's still alive.
RIP, Agent K.
He was in a movie in last year called Finest Kind.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Did he play as like the grandpa?
I wonder if he. I don't think so. He looks like a badass.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
He's got to be getting up there.
Probably right. He was born in 46.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
That is pretty fucking good. He's, 77?
And still 77? Still playing a badass?
Yeah.
I'm impressed.
Like so, what reminded me of it is there's a scene in Volcano where they're wearing, like, the body suits, uh-huh. The fucking safety suits, and the heat starts, they're, like, in the sewer, and the heat starts rising up through a fissure, and their like gloves start sticking to their suits, like their suits start melting while they're wearing them.
Nice.
Yeah,
that would be rough. Like that. Oh,
I know, right?
Imagine your gloves like melting to your hand.
Ugh, fuck that.
Like you'd have to literally get like them cut off, and it's all the skin grafting that would have to be done.
I grew up a kid in the country, so we burned our trash. You would just take the trash out in the backyard into the burn pile or in the burn barrel and fucking burn your trash.
Right.
I many a time had, like, you would go out there and you would rip a little hole in the side of the trash bag and try and find some paper that was in the side of the trash bag, and that's what you would light first, right?
Okay.
So many times you would melt the fucking
bag,
and it would drip on your finger.
Yeah.
And nothing burned like that.
Oh, yeah.
Just, yeah, terrible.
I remember as a kid playing with something that I, like, stuck in the fire because we were having, like, a fire or something, and I was hanging out. Nobody was, like, nobody saw me do it.
Yeah.
I was being, like, super sneaky, and it was, like, something plasticky. Then I, like, waved it around and ended up getting, like, caught, like, stuck on my leg.
Yep.
And for, still to this day, I have a scar from that. Oh.
Yeah.
It was
awful. I have little circular scars on the inside of my index finger from trash bags dripping on my fingers as a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. So many times.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So I can't imagine a whole bodysuit melting to you.
No way. No way. That
fuck that.
Ugh.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Imagine if their car would have done that around them.
Exactly. Right?
Right.
Just standing in a puddle of car.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine you wouldn't be standing for very long.
Probably not. You'd probably go down with that.
Yeah, absolutely. So here's a weird thing.
Okay.
Ready?
Yeah.
Okay. One day in April of 1981, so this is a year, this is, well, roughly 5 months after the incident.
Okay.
A CH-47 helicopter, which is a, you know, the kind that they spotted, the Chinook helicopters, flew into Dayton. As Colby, the grandson, watched, he became very upset. Landrum decided to take him to the spot where the helicopter had landed with the hope that it would seem less frightening on the ground.
Right.
When they reached the landing zone, they found a lot of people there already and had to wait some time before they were allowed to go inside the helicopter and talk to the pilot. Landrum and another visitor both claimed that the pilot said he had been in the area before for the purpose of checking on a UFO in trouble near Huffman. When Landrum told the pilot how glad she was to see him because she had been one of the people burned by the UFO, he refused to talk to them further and hustled them out of the aircraft.
Huh. But he's all just like openly like, yeah, I was here. I was checking on a UFO recently.
Yeah.
That seems a little hard to believe.
It's weird, right?
Yeah. I mean, normally those guys are like, you know, they're very, pretty very hard. Careful about.
Yeah. Closed-lipped.
Exactly.
Yeah, tight-lipped. That's the phrase.
Yeah. Because loose lips I guess sink ships.
That's right, and helicopters.
Uh-huh.
It's, I don't know, unless he, like, literally meant, like, something unidentified, he went to go check on, like, he was sent to go check on something, some unidentified flying object.
Recently,
right?
Like, in that same area?
Yeah.
I mean, what are the odds?
Right. But I mean, if they could have easily twisted what he said, right? Because like later he said that the incident he was talking about, like someone had reported an unidentified craft and he had come there, but that was in July of 77. So that would have been like 3 years before. But so he's saying they kind of took his story and like, and changed it to,
but if he,
to corroborate theirs.
I don't know. I think that obviously is a way to just like take the heat exactly. off of himself or whatever.
Yeah.
But also in the first place, I don't think he'd be like, yeah, I was here checking out a UFO.
Right. It is a little weird. You wouldn't expect that, right?
I wouldn't.
Another bit of corroborating evidence.
Okay, let's hear it.
So, in May of 82, UFO investigators interviewed a Dayton police officer, patrolman Lamar Walker, and his wife Marie, who claimed to have seen approximately 12 Chinook-type helicopters the same night and near the same area in which the Cash Landrum event allegedly occurred. They did not report seeing a UFO or other unexplained lights, but one or more of the helicopters, quote, had some type of bright light shining down.
Okay. Like a searchlight or something like that, or?
Yeah. Yeah. So they saw, they corroborated seeing a group of helicopters right. that night in that area.
And that could have been after this thing had already flown off.
Or before they found it.
Or yeah, true.
While they were looking for it. That could have been the searchlights.
Yeah.
Right?
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, doesn't quite corroborate it, but
right, it's not 100% corroborates the story, a piece but of it. I mean at least is enough detail to let us know that there were quite a few of these helicopters in the area.
Yeah,
something was happening.
Yep.
Okay, cool.
There then there's their legal case,
right
that they went to court. It
didn't amount to anything.
Yeah, it really didn't, but they were publicly supported by both Texas senators at the time, Lloyd Benson and John Tower,
okay.
both supported their lawsuit. But yeah, it went nowhere, basically. They essentially went to court against the U.S. Air Force.
Yeah.
That was their plan, which, you know, some might call foolhardy, right? To think that you could take on the...
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it is... I mean... It is unfortunate, though. Like, obviously, I mean, I don't know why. We know. See, I don't really know exactly. Because, I mean, obviously, they suffered a lot of after effects of this. But who do they think, like, is going to give them some type of compensation for having to deal with this? Like, I don't know. See, I'm trying to even, like, kind of form what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like... You had to have expected it to go like that.
Sure.
Right?
Like,
I don't know if that's like a really like just shitty way to put it and like, you know, very like straightforward or whatever else. But
no, I mean, it's basically what I just said, right? Like, it seems silly to think you could take on
right,
the Air exactly. Force in court. Their position during the lawsuit was not that it was extraterrestrial. Right. It was that it was some sort of military operation and they were caught and all these effects were a result of them being exposed to this military.
They also got
whatever
out.
It was. Yeah.
They could have kept going.
It's true. I mean, they sued for $20 million. That's what they were suing for.
Yeah.
But I mean, the lawsuit was taken so seriously enough that there was testimony from officials from NASA, from the Air Force, from the Army, from the Navy. Like, a lot of people went in and talked about this. But their position was, we have no idea what you encountered, but it had nothing to do with us.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't have any direct evidence.
Well, yeah.
You know?
Maybe if they would have snapped a Polaroid that night, like, you know, something.
Yeah, I mean, if they would have had some kind of physical evidence, then they might have been able to do something, but there really was none.
Right.
There was, yeah. And certainly not that it was certainly no evidence that what they encountered had anything to do with the Air Force.
See, and that's, yeah. And that's the other thing, is there, it's just, there was no way to actually show or prove anything. All that was there was just obviously the, you know, the obvious effects that it had on them or whatever else. But they could also come back and say, who's to say, like, you didn't have, you know, something, you know, this isn't the product of something that just happened over time that you had maybe before this, like a condition that,
yep,
like a pre-existing condition. There's the word I was looking for.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, it's tough. It's a tough situation.
Yeah.
And that's a, you know, that's kind of like a big one to try and take down.
Yeah. I mean, it's okay. So if what they were exposed to had anything to do with the government, then like, fuck those assholes. They for sure should have just settled out of court and given these poor women some compensation.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I mean? But like, let's say it was something extraterrestrial, then the government isn't really liable.
Right. They're not responsible
for what happened. Right. I don't know. It's a weird situation.
It is. And it's like, either way, there's just not much that can be done. And they were fighting a battle that was over before they even started it.
Yep. Absolutely. Now I have two theories for you that you'll hate.
Okay.
Okay. So these are the skeptical theories.
Of course.
So the first one is natural phenomena, right? So the idea of that what they experienced was some sort of atmospheric condition, or like ball lightning, or atmospheric plasma, something like that. They argue that intense heat and bright.
That's always a cool one.
Just like, so what they push is the idea that this like intense heat and bright light that they described could easily be explained by these, you know, known natural occurrences.
Right.
They're rare and not very understood, but like, and that's when those people lean into the fact that like the original statement was, it was just a big bright light. I don't know what shape it was. I don't know. You know what I mean? And in a situation like that, then yeah, I could see maybe some atmospheric stuff went down, and that would also explain the like sunburn like reaction,
right?
The light triggered conjunctivitis, stuff like that would come from exposure to that.
How really do you explain up. all like the helicopters, the military helicopters?
Yeah,
if that was question. The case.
And maybe there was some sort of military exercise going on at the same time.
Maybe, and they're all like, oh, I heard about this is going on. We should check it out. So they all just go there to get a front row seat.
Or they just happened to be crossing paths when it went down, yeah. Right?
I guess that's fair as well.
I mean, the odds of encountering ball lightning up close is so astronomical that, like, it wouldn't be that much crazier for a group of helicopters to be flying over when you experience ball lightning up close. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, that's fair.
It's only a little bit less likely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right place, right time.
Exactly. I mean, we talk about... It's funny because people who are into the stuff that we talk about, they talk about... shit, what's the crunchy word for coincidences?
Synchronicities.
Yeah people who are into this stuff talk about synchronicities all the time, right?
Crunchy
but
word.
Like, but those same yeah but those same people will say like, no, it's there's no way that these, you know, three things could happen at once. And it's like, you talk about synchronicities all the time, like this is just another synchronicity. You know what I mean?
I mean, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah. I mean, crazy shit lines up sometimes.
It does, but it's just more often than not, it doesn't.
That's true. I mean, by its very nature, it's rare, right?
So in that case, it wouldn't just be some odd coincidence. It would be much more than that.
Yeah.
Which
it's, I mean, if you're into the synchronicity thing, It's, you know, the universe is putting these things together for a reason.
Right. But then it's fate, right?
I suppose
so. Then you
have
to buy into fate.
I mean, I'm a determinist anyway, so that falls right in line with it. I'm not much on free will. So
yeah, I mean that's
true.
I
think it's all set in stone anyway.
We're just actors playing out
a script that's already written.
Exactly.
Yeah. Agreed.
Right. I mean, I don't
pretend. Do you think that too?
I was gonna say, I don't think that's how I think, but you know.
Yeah.
I suppose I can't say for sure one way or the other.
Right.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure it out, feeling, just like everybody else is.
Yeah. That's the overwhelming feeling I get about the nature of reality personally.
Really?
But obviously obviously I don't know, but that's if gun to my head, if I was forced to,
right,
is it free will or is it determinism? I would fall on determinism. Yeah, I know, for
we've,
sure.
We've had this conversation on numerous occasions, and not necessarily this exact one, but you know, similar, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's like I said, I'm still trying to figure it out myself.
Yeah.
You know, what I ultimately buy into or what I think or how I feel or, you know, could this be a thing? Is this coincidence? Is there such thing as coincidence? You know, is there such thing as fate? Do I believe in fate? I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
It's a lot to try to work out.
It is. I don't.
Especially
I don't,
in the.
I was going to say, I don't think this is the time or the place to try and do so. Yeah. But, you know.
It's a lot to figure out in the measly 100 years we get on Earth. It's not nearly enough time to work it out.
If we get to live that long.
Right. That's the wide end, right?
You know, right.
Yeah.
It's tough.
So the other skeptical theory that you're gonna hate,
lay it on me,
is psychological, of course.
Psychological, right? I can get behind though.
Yeah. Okay. So
maybe not with this one, but we'll see.
I'll read straight off the notes. Some theories suggest that the incident was a collective hallucination or mass hysteria, fueled by pre-existing beliefs in UFOs and the paranormal. See, one of these women was a born-again Christian. The other woman was an actual paranormal enthusiast.
Right.
So,
but weren't there other people that also saw this from different views? I thought I remembered reading that, but is that not right?
Nope. Really? Yeah, that's not right.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was the two of them and the kid.
Right.
Yep.
All right.
That's it. There were people who saw helicopters.
Saw the
that
helicopters,
night.
Were, right.
Yep. Okay. That's it.
Yeah, maybe that's where I'm getting it.
So like these people, the people who lean into the psychological explanation, they say that the medical symptoms and experiences of the witnesses afterwards could more likely be attributed to psychological factors rather than external events.
See, I don't agree with that, though.
See, like, so say, because really it was only Cash's health that took a serious decline directly after this.
Right.
Landrum basically lived a pretty normal life. She had breast cancer a few years later, mm-hmm. not something super rare, especially in the 80s. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, she had breast cancer. She beat breast cancer.
I say, very treatable.
She went on, yeah. She went on to live multiple decades after that. I think she died in the early 2000s or mid 2000s,
mm-hmm.
which she was in her 50s.
I was
going to
say, she was already, I mean,
so
she wasn't old, yeah. but she was older than Betty was.
Right. So the people who think this, basically they think these are natural thing, normal things that happened to these two women. And it was just because of this psychologically fueled event that happened in 1980 that everything, it was sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy. Mm. Every bad thing that happened to them, they thought like it must have been that. You know what I mean? Like, and it that you just build on it over the years. And yeah, it's sort of convincing to me,
kind of, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, that's because that's how people work.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, if they were completely convinced that they had this experience, that this experience was physical and real, and you know, then it would be very easy to attribute bad things happening to you to that
event. How do you explain the actual physical imprint left in her dash by her hand? You know, things like that.
It's a great question. Yeah, I know. That's a great question. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if they have if you know, if there's an explanation for that.
I do definitely. I can get behind group and mass hysteria, though.
Yep.
It's something that does obviously happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, I mean, I can't say that it's impossible for that not to be the case in, you know, this story.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's a little bit more there than just chalking it up to that.
Yeah. Here's the thing is, if they had this experience, say it's a maybe it's a combination of these two.
Okay.
Maybe they did encounter something natural.
Right.
Some natural phenomenon. And in their mind, it became this.
They
fucking
turned it into something else. Right.
Right. Right.
That's where I can get behind the ball lightning thing. You know, right. If we were to put those together, sure.
Yeah. Then it explains the physical symptoms, the immediate physical symptoms, mm-hmm. right? And then it also explains their changing that, the lens they saw it through, the psychological lens they saw it through, adds to, you know, as their health declines over the years, they're like, oh, this chronic respiratory illness, it must be because of whatever I inhaled coming off that thing.
I mean, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's the only logical reason that would be happening, right?
Right. Because, you know, women who probably smoked two packs a day in the 70s and 80s definitely don't ever get chronic respiratory illness.
No, not at all.
No, definitely not.
It doesn't happen.
It's got to be an UFO.
I don't know. I'm sticking to it being a UFO, honestly. Like,
yeah.
With everything about it, I mean, also, like, seems like there was most likely a massive cover-up in this case.
You think so? You like the cover-up?
I do.
The cover-up
for sure. And this, you know, like, this actually turning into an actual legitimate court case, you know, like, I mean, obviously, if it wasn't anything else, if there was nothing else to hide, it wouldn't have blown up so much.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know, like there wouldn't have been
as many. They wouldn't have paid it so much attention.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So, like, I feel like there's just too much to overlook for it to be group hysteria or some natural occurring event.
Yeah.
For me, it just, like, it's one of those very, like, pivotal cases in history.
Yeah.
That, you know, now we can you know, contribute, like, the effects or after effects of abduction cases and UFO cases and stuff like that, yeah. Too, you know.
Yeah.
Exposure,
I can basically. I can definitely get behind the idea of a government cover-up. I think it feels like them trying to sweep something under the rug.
Right.
Like,
without a doubt.
Whether it was, you know, alien contact or if it was just some classified military operation, it feels like they were trying to bury it for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm not going to completely disregard the idea of it being like some unknown, like, military experiment or something like that as well.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, I would say one of the two for sure.
Because you have to remember that this is 1980. This is like prime Cold War era.
Right.
Right. This is like the tail end of the Cold War. This is. So the government, all governments were very, very secretive about anything that had to do with the military.
Yeah.
At this time. Yeah, so
that's true.
Yeah. So I, you know, if aliens are real, I think it's probably just as likely as it was one or the other. Right.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Obviously, I prefer aliens over anything, but
sure,
you know, that's what I enjoy. But But yeah, I would
you're
say
not alone.
It's one of the two in this
I
case.
Mean, you're really not alone. Carly's going to go fucking nuts on this one.
I'm ready for it, honestly. First question I'm going to ask, was it aliens?
She's going to go, yes, 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 yes. Must be yes.
Sweet.
Oh, boy.
You get an alien, you get an alien, you get an alien.
Exactly. Everybody gets an alien.
Crowd cheers.
Always.
Fade to black.
Well, I think that's going to wrap up episode 137, the Cash Landrum incident.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. From the bottom of our weird, possibly alien, maybe ghostly, probably cryptid hearts for listening. We absolutely love having the chance to discuss all these wild creatures and events every week, and it's your continued attention that allows us to carry on.
We want to get to know each and every one of you, so please come and check us out on all the socials. At campfire.tales.podcast on Instagram and Facebook, at campfire.totsau on Twitter, and you can also visit our website at campfirepodcastnetwork.com. If you love the show, please rate and review it. It's what truly helps us continue bringing your weekly dose of the strange and unsettling.
And a special thanks to Greg Martin at Reverent Music on Instagram for his contributions to the beautiful music that you hear every week under the debrief. You can find more of his tunes at reverbnation.com/reverent. It's fantastic, fantastic stuff. Go give that a listen.
And that's it. Until next time.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Jordan.
And remember, campers,
stay weird
and trust in the unknown.